Welcome to the Heart Kids podcast. Join us as we explore stories of Australians impacted by childhood heart conditions. I am one of your hosts, Samuel Stolberg. I was born with a congenital heart condition and I had my first open heart surgery at the age of 26. I am passionate about mental health and connecting with other people in the heart community and beyond. Before we begin, we'd like to acknowledge that we are recording on the land of the Gubbi Gubbi peoples, otherwise known as Queensland's Sunshine Coast. We acknowledge the traditional owners of this land and the land that you're listening in from today. We pay our respect to elders past, present, and emerging. Today, I'm chatting with Rachel Knowles. Rachel is a 24-year-old professional journalist who actually interviewed one of my favorite music artists, Troy Cassadaly. A little bit jealous about that, but that's a story for another time. Rachel is also the other host of this podcast, and today it is my turn to talk to her about her story. Welcome, Rachel, and thank you for letting me interview you. Where are you joining us from?
Hello, I am joining you from Sydney. I'm currently on Bidjigal land near Kingsford in Sydney. Pleasure to be here. Very excited, very nervous, but very excited. I'm in your capable hands, so feeling at ease.
I wouldn't go that far with capable, but anyway. So to get started, tell us a little bit about your heart condition.
Yeah, of course. So I was born with tricuspid atresia, which from my understanding was essentially my tricuspid valve didn't form entirely. So when I was born, pretty much I was born in Dubbo, on Wiradjuri country in Dubbo. So I was airlifted from Dubbo to Sydney, to Westmead Children's. I had my first surgery. So I have a scar on my back from my first surgery, because when you're really little like that, they can't go in through the front of you just yet. So I've got my first surgery scar on my back. And then in 1999, when I was 2 years old, they replaced what I had in that initial surgery, which was a shunt. And they gave me a Fontan bypass. So I have a zipper down the front now and I live with a Fontan bypass.
So you grew up in Dubbo. What was it like for you growing up in a small town like that?
I actually grew up in Gilgandra. So I grew up 60 kilometres inland from Dubbo. And it's on Wiradjuri, Millaroy, Wawan country out there. Population of about 3,000 in the Shire. I think my high school was maybe about 270, 300 people. Loved it. Like, I think in terms of it in relation to my heart, my parents kind of always say that I was really lucky to grow up out there. I think when you're in such a community like that, particularly growing up, everyone kind of knew me. My dad worked at the high school, as did my mom. So a very well-loved family and community, and everybody kind of knew my story and what happened to me. So everybody was really looking out for me and was really aware of it. So I think in terms of the safety that I had in community and the love that I had in a small town was really there. But I think, as with the issue with a lot of regional rural settings, the access to medical wasn't particularly there, or the medical knowledge sometimes wasn't available when we needed it. So I think that's probably the biggest thing about growing up in a rural setting that kind of stuck out for me.
Yeah, I guess it's difficult to find that support, especially from a medical sense, growing up, you know, with that kind of stuff. So what was it like for you growing up, you know, being considered so far rural? What was that sort of journey like for you and your parents?
I think it's one of those things, right? I'd never really thought of Gil as super rural, and even country kids kind of have that, Gil's not super that rural, Wilkenya was rural, Burke's rural. So I've got all those biases. But I think in terms of having a heart kid, you know, and I can't speak to a lot of that journey of my life, because that was really my mum and my dad and my family that more carried me through that. But I think for them it was really hard. I think bringing home a baby 8 hours from the hospital that I had my surgery at, and just kind of doing the best that you can with a bub that you don't really know how to support at best, I think was really hard. And my mum always talks about, you know, every 2 weeks or so they'd drive back to Westmead and have my check-ins. And I know that there are particular doctors in my heart journey that my parents, my family have a real, love for, and the way that they supported my family and understanding how to care for me and what the world looked like when you had a heart bub. So I think they took a lot of comfort in having those visits and seeing them. We stayed at Ronald McDonald House multiple times. I was one of the only heart kids that ever went to Ronald McDonald's house. So it was really difficult, I think. I think when you're so far away from reassurance that you're doing the right thing, that can be really hard. But for me, reality is I was kind of like every other kid. I didn't really, my parents never let me be anything but like normal, I guess. It wasn't anything that stood out for me in a difference.
That's, you know, it's very challenging for your parents. You know, driving 8 hours every 2 weeks is a monumental challenge for anybody.
Expensive too.
Most definitely. Fuel was a bit cheaper back in those days, though, thankfully.
That's it.
So you've got a couple of siblings as well?
Yeah, I've got two sisters.
Yep. Excellent. Is it something like, is it a part of your journey that you guys talk about a little bit around, like, you know, with your parents and your sisters, what it was like growing up for, you know, their daughter and their little baby sister to be going through this kind of a journey?
Not really. Like, I think with my family and our journey, I think that's the big thing for me is that I don't really feel like my story is necessarily, especially because most of it happened before, you know, you come to consciousness as you're a person and you have independent thought. And I think my first memory is like when I was 6 years old and all of this happened before I was like four. You know, I think my mum said I had like 8 anesthetics by the time I was 7 or something like that. So all these surgeries really early in my life. So I think for me, I don't have too much of a connection to that part of me. Of course, my body remembers it. Like I'm aware that the trauma of that kind of stuff is there. But in terms of the narrative of what things look like, I didn't know it that well. And we've kind of only recently had these conversations. I think we love each other so, so much. But I think talking about this stuff's always really loaded, no matter what your family dynamic, no matter what your family looks like. I think talking about the reality of having somebody who has a medical condition from birth and the impacts on your life is hard to talk about. So we are now talking about it. I think we're comfortable to talk about it at times, but I think for us, we've always been really focused on I can do things, and it's really been a strength-based mindset from the get-go for me. It was never a situation that I couldn't do anything because of my heart. It's always I will do everything because I can. So I think that's also why I'm a bit stubborn. But that's kind of the mentality, I think, for us, if I can speak on their behalf, I guess.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And I believe your words were, though, you know, it's, you know, strength doesn't allow for grieving. What was your strength denies your ability to grieve?
That's a big thing that I'm kind of realizing now. Like I'm 24 now and I'm having to have these conversations around family planning, and I remember the last cardiologist appointment that I went to, I sat in my car at Macca's after and cried. And it kind of hit me that a lot of other people don't have to do this stuff. And I've never had the space to kind of, I guess, be sad about that. And I think when you are different, even though I don't look different and a lot of people in my life might not know this about me, even when you're different and you don't kind of let yourself or acknowledge the differences, it kind of denies you the ability to grieve it. Or to acknowledge that it's okay to be a bit different. It's okay to have those things about you. I think the hard thing for me is the realization that this was something that I didn't have a choice about. I didn't have any power in this, and this is just something that's happened. And all of us have had to deal with it in however way that we have. And in amazing ways, everything that I do is a testament to my family. But yeah, the ability to kind of sit back and be like, actually, it kind of sucks. You know, my parents didn't have the ability to have a normal baby girl. My sisters didn't have a normal baby sister. I didn't have a normal growing up life. And it's okay to be sad about that, I think.
And I think that's such an important lesson for anybody. Grief is such obviously a horrible thing, but it's something that we all need to process. And, you know, there's a lot of us, especially as blokes, we spoke about it in our podcast where you interviewed me. We don't process it, and you know we're told by society not to do that, just basically shut it out. But being able to sit there and sit through that grief and understand it and allow it to be is such a powerful thing, and it allows so much healing. So as a female, you mentioned a little bit around sort of family planning. What's that looking like for you now going into your appointments, and how are you, I guess, traversing the space of looking at where your future is going to lie?
Yeah, I think that was always kind of a big thing for me. I think I can remember being little and this kind of narrative about when you get to the age of having kids, we're going to have to figure out what that looks like because you might not be able to. And back then, that was like early 2000s, you know, things looked a lot different medically. But I remember being in year six and having a sex ed lesson, and pretty much sex ed back then is like, you know, women will have babies, and thinking that I might not be able to do that. So what does that kind of, where does that leave me? So I kind of grew up, I think, quite detached from the idea of having my own family. And it's been, you know, I think I got into the age of I have to go to gynecologist and I have to go to, like, I have to look at these things because my heart is something that's always going to be involved in my health. You know, even in terms of contraception, that was a huge, big battle for me to try and figure out what's the best for my heart. And in terms of, yeah, in terms of family planning, I think I'm now trying to build, I do have a really good relationship with my gynecologist, and that's super good because that and allows me that relationship to be like, okay, this is, I want to set myself up so I can do this, because I know that, you know, socially women have a timeline anyway at the point where they're supposed to have children. But for me, that's even more tense because it's not a fertility problem. It's not a reproductive problem. It's a heart problem. It's my body. So for me, I think the end of last year, I decided that I was going to get cracking on it. I went and had all these tests to make sure that, like, I had a cycle and I was fertile and all that kind of stuff that goes with that kind of family planning, and was really proactive about it. And I was lucky at that point. I had a really wonderful gynecologist who supported me in that. She retired, so I've had a bit of a bumpy ride to get to the one that I have now, who's also wonderful. But yeah, even I think in that as well, looking at, okay, we're talking about family planning and what that looks like and if I'll have capacity to do that with my heart, but we also need to discuss unplanned pregnancies and what that looks like for somebody who has a heart condition. And I feel like, you know, women's reproductive health is already so taboo as it is. It's really hard to kind of find a medical team that politically is on your side, but then also medically has the information that you need. And I'm really lucky to have that now, and I'm really aware that I'm on a timeline, and that's okay. Medical science is great. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen, but it's knowledge is power. So the best way that I can prepare is to make sure that I'm as well informed as I can be to make those choices when I want to make those choices, not when I have to.
Yeah, that's it's very difficult. You know, we talk a lot around societal expectations, and, you know, females in particular, like, you know, you guys seem to have this biological clock that you need to be having babies by X amount. But then, yeah, you guys, you particularly would have, yeah, added pressure for that. So as a female, how are you finding going into having these conversations in a medical sense? I guess being such a masculine-based system, how are you finding it going in, especially managing your own healthcare now?
I think it's all, like, no matter what kind of, I think women with all kind of medical conditions kind of have this struggle. I think it's a universal kind of, like, even if you don't have a medical condition, to kind of not feed into the trope of you're a hysterical woman. We know that all this stuff happens around our pain, and, like, we know about the patriarchy in the medical space. I think for me, I've been really lucky. I think because my heart stuff happened really early on, like, my mum and dad always kind of instilled in me that if you feel like something's not going well with your body, you have a right to say that because you know your body best. And I think that was a really good lesson to learn very early on in life, because there have been so many times that I've gone into doctors and, you know, I don't go in empty-handed. I feel like that's another thing that comes with being a woman, is I go in with, this is what's happening to me. This is what I think it is. This is the information that I have about myself, or particularly what it is. What do you think it is? So I come armed with stuff whenever I step into that space as it is. And I think it hurts when you're not listened to, and it hurts when you're not validated or supported. Hurts even more when it comes from women. But something that I learned really young was to really advocate myself and be like, okay, no, like, I know this. So if you're not going to give me what you need, I'll find someone else. And that's kind of been one of the most important things for me. And it's really hard at times. I had recently one that I walked away from and was so upset by it. It took me 6 months to go back and to find a new doctor, a new specialist. But it's kind of what you need to do, because you need to feel safe in medical settings, particularly when you have a heart condition that, you know, if I feel safe with somebody, I will wait it out until we figure out. I will do the tests. I will, because I know that I have that trust in them. So I think that's been the biggest thing, is that you have to have boundary setting. You have to be very assertive in this space, which is sad, but also really important to keep yourself safe.
Yeah, for sure. And that goes across the board for any female. And there's so many health conditions out there, not just in the congenital heart disease area, that can wreak havoc on the the family planning for females. So, yeah. So what does normal life for you now, I guess, look like?
Looks great. looks super normal, which is really good. Like, obviously, living with a condition like this, I am prone to doing a few more doctor's appointments than the average person. But I think, yeah, life looks really good. Like, I have full-time employment. I have 2 bachelor's degrees. I have lived out of home since I was 18. And I'm living in a major city. I don't know how I'm affording this rent, but it's all right. So life is really good. And it just keeps kind of getting better, which is good.
It's always a beautiful thing. what's it like for you, I guess, transitioning from pediatric care into, you know, the adult care, and then navigating that space on your own?
Really bad, actually. My transition from pediatric care to adult care, I dropped off. I disappeared. I think I can remember being 16, because I was with Westmead Children's Hospital. They had me as a bub. They had me that whole time. And I think living in Gill as well, it's really hard to make that move. And my mum, bless her soul, has always been so good with my appointments. She has always been so wonderful. And she kind of kept hold of that for me. I think when I was 18, I needed to move my care across. I needed to move it when I was 16. Never quite happened. Still kept going to Westmead Children. So the transition took a really long time. At first, I was told that I'd have like a team that I would have at Westmead. And now I have a beautiful cardiologist who I just think the world of at Westmead. Really happy I ended up with him. But the transition was really hard. And I think particularly I'd had a big life shift from living at home, having that kind of safety with mum and dad in terms of my health and my appointments and that ease of like, okay, I don't have to adult, to, you know, moving onto a college campus for 2 years, like then, you know, moving out on my own and now living here, like I just got really swept up in kind of a different world. And didn't, I think, yeah, the same thing kicking for me at uni was like, I don't want to be too different. Don't want to have to go to the doctors all the time. So didn't really do that when I should have. But now I have been really proactive about my health. And I think that's been a really good thing, because now, you know, knowledge is power. I know what I need. I know how to look after myself, and I know who to go to when I don't know the answers to things.
Absolutely killing it out there. So I just want to reiterate a couple of facts, because I think these are very important topics to, I guess, you know, raise, because especially for young females coming through, you know, being a young woman around family planning, it's such an important topic. But to go back and retrace our steps a little bit more, you know, the grieving for self and others. The others part is a huge part that, you know, for especially your story, and it's something about mine and something I've been thinking about a lot. You know, I don't like it, you know, in my journey, I get self-absorbed with it, and I haven't necessarily thought about my mother or my stepdad and my sisters and my brother. So what does that grieving, I guess, look like for you, and how do you facilitate that for others?
Yeah, I think this is only something that I'm really new to as well. I think for a little bit of context, I don't often talk about my heart. I find that like I only talk about 5 minutes and then I kind of move on. It's not something that I like to talk about, and I think that it's not something that I like to talk about because I don't know how I feel about it, because I've always had all these positive feelings and now I feel a little bit sad about it. And it kind of all happened. It was probably about 2 years ago now. I was watching like a Fontan Education Day, and I was in this Zoom call with like people who like I have treated me, people who I know, like wonderful, incredible, inspiring people. And I'm having this conversation around mental health and like heart conditions. And I think for me, I've never connected that. I think it's all, you know, because I wasn't conscious when I was like going through all of this stuff. I didn't associate it with anything that was kind of part of me. So I was watching this like seminar, and the doctor was talking about how when you have a heart condition, you're like 90% more likely to get PTSD. And at that point in time, I was also going through a situation where that kind of PTSD stuff was really coming up for me. So it was this concept of like, you're likely to develop it later in life by something that can trigger that because you have this when you're young. And you're also, you know, likely to maybe people around you during that traumatic period might also have that as well, might also have symptoms of PTSD because of what they've experienced. And I think something clicked and I cried my eyes out. It was horrible. It was like, you know, that feeling when you're triggered and your body goes into a bit of a stress and you're hot and you can't stop crying. And I remember calling my dad, and he was wonderful as always and was kind of like, you know, this is a part of who you are and you get to choose how you wave the flag for who you are. And that's kind of how we end up here. Thank you, Heart Kids. But also that notion, I think the big thing that came out for me then was I was so young, this wasn't something that I did. This was something my parents lived through and something my sisters lived through. And if I had done that to them because of who I was, which I had no choice to be this way, I felt so guilty. I just felt that like this was not something that I had picked, but it wasn't something that they picked either. And they'd had to deal with this through no fault of their own. And that guilt is kind of crushing. It's really, really, really hard to kind of look around you and be like, oh, like I did this, but I also didn't do this. It was such a bizarre experience. I think I'm still grappling with that. You know, when you don't have a choice in the circumstance, it is really hard. And other people are hurt by that too.
Yeah, for sure. And it's that's just adding to the complexity the mental health battles that we go through. Like, you know, there's grief there for what you go through, but then there's also, like you said, that guilt for our family and friends, and it's such a confusing space.
I like sat down with my mom, my dad, and my sister recently and kind of had a few conversations around it, and what, like, the stories just shock me, and they will never probably not shock me because there's just so many layers to this kind of stuff. There's, you know, obviously all the physical stuff, but then there's the like trying to live through and do your everyday life and, you know, being a new parent and, you know, my mom not being able to hold me for the first time. Like, she had to wait a couple of days before she could do that. That's a big moment in any mother's life, and to not have that, I think, is really hard. And I, you know, even for my sisters, you know, having a young baby kind of come into the world. Yeah, really, those conversations kind of really opened that up to me about the fact that I didn't have a community around me growing up that understood me, but they also didn't have a community around them when I was growing up that could support them either. So it's not just me.
Yeah, everybody's in this fight together, and I think that's where organisations like Heart Kids, they're so important, not just to the children that are going through this, but to the parents. You know, I'll put my hand up and I'll happily have a yarn to any father out there that's struggling with anything. And they need to know that this support is there for them to access. So, you know, sharing stories like yours is so powerful. So thank you for that. I think that's about it for today. Thank you for sharing. You've got such an amazing story and you're such a beautiful woman, and it's commendable for you to be powering on doing the things that you're doing and hosting such, you know, a world-renowned podcast now.
Same to you. Hell yeah.
Absolutely crushing it. So, but thank you very much, Rachel. Thank you for sharing your story, and I can't wait to hear more of it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This was wonderful.
If this episode has brought up anything for you, or you need some advice or guidance on your CHD journey, you can call the Heart Kids helpline on 1-800-432-785. To access more information, as well as find out more about the support Heart Kids offers, visit the website at heartkids.org.au. The information in this podcast is not a substitute for medical advice from your doctor or healthcare team. Always talk to your doctor about matters that affect yours or your family's health.